Have you ever heard the expression, what you don't repair, you repeat? Well, I'm going to tell you how I learned this the hard way so that you can avoid ending up in a toxic situation again. That's today on The Truth and Our Trauma. Are you still feeling tangled up in a toxic relationship that's actually over? Toxicity is actually so hard to heal from because there are so many layers of confusion and deception that even if you can get through them, it doesn't mean that you know where to go next. If you are tired of living in this prison of the past, I want to invite you to join me for my 6-week healing intensive called No Tox, the Toxic Relationship Healing Intensive. With No Tox, you'll finally figure out why you're still tangled up in all that toxicity and what you can do to leave it all behind. Enrollment for No Tox is now open, and you can learn more by going to uncommonvalor.co or clicking the link in the show notes. Ever sit down to pray and end up thinking about what you need to buy at the store instead? No judgment. I've totally been there. And that's why I decided to create the Ignite Strategic Prayer Planner and Journal. Know what to pray, track your impact, and learn to hear God's voice for yourself. Ignite Volumes 1 and 2 are now available on Amazon and at the link in the show notes. What we don't repair, we repeat. This is the idea that if I don't recognize my own patterns of relating to people, that I very well may end up in a situation I don't want to be in again and again and again. And this was absolutely the case for me. I had been in an abusive relationship for almost 20 years. And once I was out of that relationship, I knew what that looked like. I knew what those patterns looked like. And so I thought for sure I won't end up in that kind of situation again. And I didn't. But I did end up in a whole lot of other toxic, unhealthy relationships after that. I wouldn't necessarily say that they were abusive. I could definitely say that they were toxic and that they were unhealthy. And these were friendships. This was even church-type relationships and romantic relationships. But truth be told, if you looked at the entire trajectory of my life, if you looked at the entirety of my story, you would see that this trail of toxic and unhealthy individuals has been lagging along behind me my entire life. Even before I ever got into this abusive situation, I had tons and tons of unhealthy connections and relationships. Kids that bullied me on the playground, friends that stabbed me in the back and betrayed me, leaders that were manipulative and conniving. And so this was something that, yes, was something I was continuing on with in the future, but it was something actually that had been long with me since my past. And the reason I point out this trail being so lifelong is the fact that a lot of times these things do come to us first in childhood. In some way, we have experienced toxicity and abuse from individuals at times that we couldn't have necessarily, quote unquote, invited it or controlled it, right? We could not have been responsible for this kind of treatment. However, and this is a big however that I want to be very careful as I say this, what I learned in those situations were survival skills that I began to then carry with me into relationships in the future. So while often these things come into our lives in ways that we cannot influence or control, we end up having to develop a way of getting along and surviving in these situations that ultimately, as we do gain the ability to choose, we do gain agency in the future, that we end up in situations that are just like what we didn't have control over. Now, the reason I want to be delicate with this as I'm trying to explain this to you is that you understand that I am not saying ever, whether you had agency in the relationship or not, never, 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 ever, ever is someone harming you your fault. Never. Never. That other person always has the ability to choose the way they relate to you. That is always their own responsibility. Period. Full stop. End of story. But what I do want to highlight as we're talking in this episode about repairing things so that we don't repeat them, what I do want to identify, though, is the patterns that we have learned early on so often are things that we are then repeating in situations in the future that are keeping us in situations that we actually don't want to be in. So to give you an example, as a child, I learned that the easiest way to deal with any kind of toxicity, any kind of harm, any kind of disappointment in relationships, the best way was for me to be at my best. It seemed to be the way to minimize risk if I could just be the one to either fix it, if I could be the one to forgive, if I could be the one to be the quote unquote bigger person. I learned that that was the best way to keep relationships going in a way that I could still feel safe in the process. I could feel like perhaps I had some control over that situation when I really didn't. And safety is really what we're seeking in these situations where we feel so vulnerable and so taken advantage of. And so even if that comes in the way of an illusion of safety, that I'm in this situation and I can't change it, or I don't perceive that I can change it, and yet I feel like I'm actually changing it by having control, then now suddenly I feel like I'm okay because I'm in the driver's seat. The problem comes for us when we apply those same skills of trying to maintain a relationship when we actually now, as adults, have the ability to control it. We have the ability to say whether or not I'm going to be in this relationship. We have the ability to move out of a situation that we don't want to be in. But until we perceive that that's an option for us, we will continue to do the things to just maintain the relationship. And that is how we end up in situations again and again and again that we don't want to be in. But what I found most difficult moving forward out of this abusive relationship was the fact that toxicity has a lot of different flavors. It looks different in different people. It looks different in different personalities. And it looks different, as I've said before, whether or not this person is behaving in a reactive, toxic way, or if they're full on, full scale, manipulative and abusive. When it comes to moving forward, we basically then are left with two choices. We're either going to wade through this minefield of humans and have to figure out what all those nuances look like every time we get hurt, which, I mean, we do want to learn from our experiences, but that puts us in situations a lot of harm and a lot of damage, right? We're not going to try to look at all the different types of toxicity and become an expert in them by learning the hard way. So the other way that we then can move forward and approach this is to look at, what are my patterns? What have I learned to do? How am I approaching relationships, friendships? And what am I seeking and looking for in those initial stages that is actually blinding me to the truth of what is going on with this person? And as we're approaching our past patterns, this is a place where it can be really uncomfortable, you know? And it does require a level of courage to do this. And I want to say this to you, that as we're approaching this subject of looking at where we have been in the past and what our role was, you know that I've been there. You know that I know this by experience. And so I come at this with the utmost compassion, because what we're doing when we do this is we're just getting curious. We're just looking at, how did I gain this habit? How did I learn to do things this way? What has it caused me? How has it harmed me? And what are my opportunities now in the future? How can I change it? There's no condemnation in the process. We know that those who are in Christ Jesus, there is no condemnation for us. So this is a curious and careful exploration of where we have been, how we've been operating, and what opportunities now exist for me to be able to choose a different course of action going forward. And as I said before, when we do this, we are not accepting blame that doesn't belong to us. We did not cause another person to treat us a certain way, right? But we do want to see, where did I have a choice and I didn't know it? Or where did I have a choice and I could make a different one now? And in the curiosity, we also learn to just have compassion for ourselves and to see that we did the best we knew how at the time. We were working with what we knew at the time. We didn't know then what we know now. Of course, we'd make different choices because we know different things now. But given what we knew at the time, we did the best we knew how. But now we want to take this experience and we want to figure out how can we know better. And I have found that this lens of compassion and curiosity is really the only way that I can even find any kind of courage to revisit some things in the past. And it's coming, though, from the work that I do with the Lord in the present, that as I understand His compassion for me and as I experience it in the present, that's what I'm taking with me when I'm going back to look at some things from the past. When I'm doing this, I'm not going without Jesus. I'm not going anywhere without Him. Period, end of story. And because often the Holy Spirit, as we're building that relationship with the Lord in the present, the Holy Spirit is going to show us some things that maybe we were too frightened to look at before, or that perhaps we weren't ready to look at before, from the sense that we couldn't really gain even the wisdom that we want to gain from it. And so these steps are really incremental, but they're things that we don't do by ourselves. We do this with the Lord guiding us all the way. And if He's got compassion for me, then I can have compassion for me. So if we look at this period of my life, though, where I was getting out of this abusive relationship and yet ending up in these other toxic ones, as I have been able to go back and revisit that period of time of my life and understand what I was repeating that had not been repaired, the way that I can really conceptualize of this is there are kind of these four specific areas where me personally, I was falling into these traps over and over and over again. And they all start with the letter A. Should make it really easy to remember, right? It just kind of worked out that way. One of the first things, though, overarchingly, that I was having trouble with, and that has taken me probably the longest time to work out, is anxiety. It's the anxiety that comes with being in an uncertain situation. And actually, if I really look at the other three things in this list, they sort of are subheadings underneath this overarching heading of anxiety, that when we have experienced harm in the past, approaching then new relationships is scary. It causes anxiety. It causes us to look at ourselves and analyze ourselves and analyze this other person and their motives and try to figure them out, try to figure ourselves out. And sometimes the fear actually causes us to read the situation incorrectly. It can actually cause us to ignore the flags that we're seeing. So we can kind of explain them away and actually create for ourselves a certainty in the situation where there is so much uncertainty. That seems so backwards. We would think that all the time your anxiety about a situation would cause you to run away from it. And sometimes that does happen. But for other times, it actually will cause us to try to figure out a way to be okay with it, to be okay with the situation and to make it work so that we can just end the uncertainty part. And if I look at friendships I had in the past or failed romantic relationships, a lot of them have this common thread of just make it work. And as I said before, this is a pattern I learned how to deal with a classroom bully that you're going to be sitting in a class of 26 kids with year after year after year. You learn to get along with a kid like that by just trying to make it work very often, right? And so it was that just make it work mentality that I was then taking into new romantic relationships, for example, of like, okay, well, I don't really like that about this person, but that seems to be okay. I can put up with that, you know, and that sort of thing. Rather than recognizing at the very beginning, I had agency. I didn't actually have to stay in that situation, but I was already in this make it work mindset. And why? Because it seems to be easier to figure out how you can put up with the situation that's in front of you instead of the unknown of trying to find another match, trying to find another connection, another friend. And so in my work, what I had to recognize was this pattern of anxiety that was there, that actually, in many cases, this anxiety was a good thing because it was telling me that this was a situation I didn't need to be in. And though I had to learn that I actually had the agency in this, I had a choice to step back from the situation. And instead of criticizing myself for being anxious and trying to plow my way through it, recognize that this was an indication that I shouldn't proceed, that there would be other options for me and that I did not need to make this one work. Okay, this one is for all my overthinkers out there. I used to be absolutely debilitated by intrusive thoughts. Everything from constant worry to just dread of the future, I couldn't make it stop. If you're there right now, I have developed a free downloadable guide to help you get your mind back. It's called Overthinking, Get Out of Your Head and On with Your Life. And you can download it for free right now at uncommonvalor.co. The number two thing that I kept falling for, especially when it came to romantic relationships, was attraction. This is a huge issue when we look, especially at dating culture in today's day and age. We have a very attraction-centered culture. Attraction is the reason that we are picking people based on a type, that we think we know what is good for us based on what we are attracted to. This is why we end up kind of meeting the same type of person over and over and over again in a different body. And it's because there is something about this type or something about these attributes and qualities that we are drawn to. But so often, this is literally like a moth to a flame, that the thing you are drawn to is going to wreck you. In dating, for example, I was constantly finding myself dating a very similar type of person. And it was because I was looking for the chemistry. You know, our culture is so built on the chemistry. And I'm not saying that we should not be attracted to a person, but it shouldn't be the primary attribute that we're looking for in a relationship. And truth be told, this happens in friendships too. This happens when we meet someone and we find perhaps there's a lot of like chemistry and energy, or there's something that's really like fun and, you know, really a draw, an attraction about this person. The problem innately with attraction is that there is literally no room for character. That when we allow ourselves to be drawn in by attraction first, then we're in a situation where we start to get really drawn in, especially potentially emotionally. And then it's only after the point that we're already so drawn in that we start to realize that there's some major problems here. That was especially my pattern in dating. You know, I am talkative. I'm an extrovert. And so I was ending up with other very outgoing people who I just had all this really explosive chemistry with at the very beginning, which just seems like a ton of fun. But ultimately, the fun fades away when that chemistry indicates ultimately that this person didn't have any character to back it up. It doesn't mean that all people who are talkative and have a lot of this, you know, energy are lacking character. It doesn't mean that. But if we fall for the charm, we fall for the facade first, then when the character is not there, we find ourselves in a situation again now where I have to figure out, oh my gosh, like, am I going to continue down this road? Or like, is it too late? Can I back out? And we're in a situation we didn't want to be in the first place. So as I stepped back, started doing the work, I recognized that I had this tendency to prioritize attraction. I was putting that like way A, number one on top of my list. And it was influencing the way then that I was approaching meeting people. I was presenting myself and showing up myself in such a way that I was actually inviting this kind of thing. And once I recognized, after repeating several mistakes, that I had this pattern, I recognized I needed to slow way down and take the time to get to know somebody's character before I ever care about the chemistry. And what this does for us then is gives us the ability to choose relationships, friendships, whatever type of relationship it is, based on alignment. That when there's not all this thrill and excitement and all this kind of thing, and the character is front and center, even the calling that God has on your life and this other person's life, that as you're exploring who you are and they're exploring who they are, that when you're coming together and meeting and getting to know one another based on these types of terms, then you have the ability to recognize at the beginning, is this person aligned with my life? Are they going in a similar direction? Is this a person I could trust, that I could be linked up with? And it's something you have to learn gradually over time. And attraction is only going to blind that. It's only going to cover that over. And you may be in a situation where you're trying to assess the character and the alignment after the fact, but because this attraction is now a factor and everyone is putting on their best fake self in order to keep the thing going, you don't even know at that point if what you're dealing with is real or not. And one of the reasons attraction becomes such a priority to us is because of the next thing that I recognized that I was falling for, and it was approval. There are a lot of ways that we can allow needing someone else's approval to draw us into a situation that we don't want to be in. In the example of attraction, for example, when I am sitting across from this person and, you know, there's all this attraction and this energy and this chemistry that's going on, innately, what each party is often participating in that moment is not actually mutual sharing. It's not actually what one is giving to the other. It's actually the opposite. It is what each is receiving from the other. That when we are approaching a situation out of this need for approval, we want then to get the most attractive person or the most validating person, right? So we're prioritizing all kinds of wrong things because underneath this driving force of attraction is this desire to be approved of, even to feel approved of ourselves. Sometimes it's the approval of that actual person, right? That I'm putting on my best self and that I want that person to think well of me. I want that person to like me. I want that person to stay close to me. And so I'm going to do all kinds of things to get them to approve of me by the way that I perform for them. But inevitably, this is all fake again, right? This is all built on fakery. It's not built on a person who is a genuine human being with highs and lows and gifts and challenges. It's all based on let's all be all the best all the time. And that's exhausting. And nobody can keep up with that. And it's where then we end up in these situations where we don't actually feel valued. We don't actually feel like this person likes us for us because they don't actually. They like us for who we have projected ourselves to be. For me, this is what was beneath so much people-pleasing in my life. So much people-pleasing. So much of saying yes and taking on things I didn't want to take on and the inability to set boundaries, all that is so people would not be disappointed in me. And that is a difficult thing to break. And yet, when we do, we come to the other side of this, which is to be in relationships where we can be authentic and where other people can be authentic. As I have spent more and more time healing and just being alone with God, it has been hard. I'm not going to lie. Loneliness is a hard, real situation. It is difficult. However, in it, I recognize that one of the things that made loneliness so unbearable for me was that I needed other people because I needed to feel approved of. I needed to feel like I was okay. And yet the more time that I had to be alone, just through the various circumstances that the Lord had me in, I recognize that everything I was seeking, I already had. I recognize that there were ways that I actually could spend time with God and recognize that He loves me, recognize that I'm approved of purely because I'm His child, you know? And there's all kinds of very like pithy statements that people make about, you know, the Lord is your husband and, you know, all those kind of things. And it's one of those things that when somebody else tells you that, it's so offensive. And yet, when you experience it for yourself, though, it is everything. It is everything. This relationship that God and I have now that we didn't have before has quieted all that anxiety about being worthy in recognizing that He is the one who only He's the one who can tell me who I am, period. He made me. He's the only one who gets to tell me. And now that I understand that, I don't approach these situations needing approval anymore. I actually want to know, do you carry the same peace that I have? Because then that means when I'm at my worst and you're at your worst, we can still know, hey, we're just having a bad day and encourage each other and keep moving on. And that's what it is to be in a relationship with other people as your authentic self, is knowing that I'm just as lovable on a bad day as I am on a good day. And then the last thing that I recognized that I was falling into was this habit of creating an early attachment. I was getting emotionally attached way too fast. I was putting myself, projecting myself into a life, into the future with someone that I didn't actually even know was trustworthy. And I didn't know this until I ended up in a situation where this situationship that I was in fell apart. And I felt like the whole rug had been pulled out from underneath me. And I couldn't figure out why was I so despondent. And it was, though, because I had already emotionally invested myself into a relationship where the other person was not meeting me with that same level of investment, where I was feeling anxious, again, about this relationship and where it was going. I resolved that by projecting all of my emotional energy into this relationship and into this person so that I guess somehow I could force a sense of stability into it, right? That if I am coming my whole self all in, then I'm going to make this thing stable on my own. That purely by my own will, I am going to make this thing happen. I remember really early on in the healing of all of these things, telling someone, I don't know how to be anything other than all in or all out. To me, it was all or nothing. And the issue with this is for us to be able to slowly go into any kind of relationship and to investigate who this person is and how our lives fit together and all that sort of thing, you have to have a lot of ambiguity. You have to have a lot of unknown, and you have to be able to endure the tension of it in order for the truth to be able to come out, and either for the thing to just blossom in this really beautiful and organic way without this pressure on it, or for it to reveal itself as something that you don't belong in, and for you to then be able to extract yourself from it without feeling like you're losing a bunch of yourself. As I did the work with this, what I recognized was there is a way that many of us learn to attach in relationships that has something to do with our families of origin, something to do with the way that our attachment went with our parents, right? And this is all over the map for us because some of you listening to me, you know, you had very hard, difficult, harmful relationships with your parents. And so this is more apparent, perhaps. Others of you may have been in a situation like I was where I actually had a good relationship with my parents. It's not perfect, though. Our parents are not perfect human beings. Nobody is. Even the best parents are not, right? And so there's going to be disconnects that happen for all different kinds of reasons, whether it's the maturity or immaturity of your parents, whether it's personality, preference, those types of things. There's going to be disconnections, though, is the point. However you were raised, there's disconnections that happen that cause, again, this anxiety in a relationship where then we try to solve that anxiety as quickly as we can. Solving that usually looks like I'm all in or I'm all out. That seems to be the safest way. I'm all in or I'm all out. And for a vast majority of my relationships, I was all in. And it was harmful to me. It was harmful to me. I can laugh about it now, but it was harmful to me. And I recognize, though, again, this is something I had power over. I had the ability, again, as I mentioned, in this relationship with the Lord, knowing I can be fully attached to God with no risk, fully. And I know sometimes there's wounding in our lives that causes us to be fearful of God. I've been through that. We doubt him. We don't understand him. We're scared of him, all the things. And though he is patient in helping us, guiding us actually in the process of allowing that to be repaired, that we would not repeat so many of these things, because what's being repaired first is our broken heart. And only he's the one who knows how to do that. Only he's the one who knows exactly what our heart needs. And so as we engage, though, in that process of letting him show us who he really is and enduring the tension of that, there's a lot of tension in that, in asking questions, are you good? Where were you? And really being able to sit in the tension of not knowing the answers to that and yet having to walk forward day by day by day, that as he shows himself faithful, which is absolutely who he is and who he showed himself to be with me, as he shows himself faithful day after day after day, then it gave me the ability to endure some of that ambiguity and some of that tension, but with the awareness that where I didn't understand, I could know that he was present and that he was guiding me. And that then when I was faced with ambiguity in a relationship with another human, I didn't necessarily need for that to be resolved nearly as quickly because I already knew the base I was working from. I already knew I had a faithful God that I could always lean into, that I needed him way more than I needed to be attached to this other person. And so then in the security of my attachment with the Lord, I can endure some of that discomfort of the tension of getting to know someone. And through that, then being able to allow people to show you who they really are. And that's really, really what it is if we get too attached too quickly, again, we're blinded. We don't really know who this person really is. And we want to discover that really genuinely over time and invest ourselves a little bit more in incremental ways before we really decide whether or not we're making a commitment or connecting ourselves with this person. And I say all of this to say that so much of what I learned about what needed to be repaired in my heart didn't actually have to do with the people who hurt me. It did have to do with understanding why I experienced so much anxiety around relationships and what it was causing me to do, why I was prioritizing attraction and approval and attachment. And where I initially started this process of repair, trying to figure out how I could be healthy enough to re-engage in a relationship and get my normal life back, it was through the very messy and uncertain process of this that I began to learn that everything that I needed, I already had with God. The deepest cry of my soul was to know that I belonged and that I mattered. And if I looked at this entire trail of toxicity throughout my life, that's what I was seeking. And while there were situations that I could not have controlled, I couldn't have gotten myself out of, there were other situations that I didn't even know that I did have the ability to get away from. And the awareness of knowing where I did have these choices and the empowerment to actually do it, to actually get away from situations that I didn't want to be in, and to set boundaries and do all that hard stuff only came because I always knew God had my back. I began to discover how for me, how for you, how for us that he is, that he doesn't want his kids in these types of situations. And that where maybe in the past we didn't know that or we didn't have the ability to get out of situations, now we do. And now we can know better. And now we can take those experiences and we have the ability to make changes in the future that ultimately then actually give us not only purpose out of what happened to us, but power over it. And that power comes from being in his presence. That power comes from knowing that the Lord is with us, that he's guiding us, he's directing us, that we're not out here floating around doing things all by ourselves, that it's not all up to us to figure it all out. And learning how to engage in that and live in it in such a way that it changes the course of our lives from where it looked like things were heading to where he actually wants to take us. And I'll admit that sometimes I wasn't sure that I wanted to go where he was taking me. But what I can tell you is that I know that where he is taking us is very, very good. Until next time, shalom. Thanks for being with me for this episode today. I hope you'll come back again. And in the meantime, you can follow me over on social media and find out about our resources and services over at uncommonvalor.co.